In a tit-for-tat move, Iran blacklists dozens of British and EU-related individuals and entities for backing terrorism and inciting violence in the country. The European Commission chief says charges against the European Parliament vice president are very serious. This after allegations that Qatar paid bribes to influence the EU policy debate. And U.S. President Biden stressing Washington's strong support for Kiev and the war with Russia. He says that the U.S. is focusing on boosting Ukraine's air defenses. I'm Behrouz Najafi. Welcome. Tehran slapped sanctions on dozens of EU and British individuals and entities over their support for what the foreign ministry is calling acts of terrorism and rioting in the Islamic Republic. The measures target 70 individuals and entities in Britain and 15 in the European Union. They were blacklisted for supporting terrorist groups and inciting terrorism, violence, and hatred in Iran. The ministry says that those acts fueled the recent riots and violations of the rights of the Iranian people. The sanctions include visa bans and asset freezes. Tehran earlier imposed similar restrictions on other British and European individuals. The EU and the UK have imposed several rounds of sanctions on Iran for alleged crackdown on protests during the recent incidents. Tehran has rejected the allegations and says it's been dealing with rioters. Iran once again strongly condemns a decision by European satellite operator Eutelsat to take Iranian news channel Press TV off the air. Foreign Ministry spokesman says the move is politically motivated and aimed at preventing the voice of the Iranian people from being heard. Nasser Kanani also says the Europeans preach others on freedom of expression and the free flow of information, but they move to block out Press TV despite its compliance with international rules. He also slammed European countries for hosting TV channels that foment violence and terrorism in Iran. Eutelsat has warned Press TV that it will take the broadcaster off the air. Press TV has strongly condemned the decision. Israeli atrocities against Palestinians know no bounds. The regime forces have killed one more teenager in the occupied West Bank. According to the Palestinian Health Ministry, a 16-year-old girl was shot dead during an Israeli raid in an eastern neighborhood of the city of Jenin. The raid also left three injuries. Jenin has been a focal point of Israeli violence against Palestinians recently. The regime has also intensified crackdown on people across the occupied territories. So far this year, the military attacks have taken the lives of around 220 Palestinians in the West Bank and the besieged Gaza Strip. Our West Bank correspondent Mona Kandel tells us more about the killing of the teenage Palestinian girl by Israeli forces.
The area where the Israeli forces have raided the house of Zakarni was inside in one of the overcrowded, of course, neighborhoods, and they didn't respect this issue that Palestinians, civilians, unarmed people are inside this area. The Israeli soldiers wanted to arrest those people who are considered as wanted for security reasons, members of the different resistance groups. So using their arms and their weapons in such areas would definitely lead to the killing of more Palestinians, of more innocent Palestinians. At the end of the day, this girl didn't do anything. She was inside her house. She didn't pose any kind of threat to the Israeli soldiers, yet she was shot and killed. The Palestinian Liberation Organization at the same time considered the killing of Jana as an assassination, because once the Israeli forces kill people in cold blood, knowing that none of them would be sued for their crimes, it's easy for them to kill more Palestinians, even if children, and posing no threat, knowing at the end of the day they would not be sued.
According to the United Nations, more than 11,000 children have been killed or maimed in the Saud-led war on Yemen. UNICEF says hundreds of thousands of children also remain at risk of death from starvation or preventable diseases such as cholera and measles. Some 2.2 million children are acutely malnourished, a quarter of them aged under five. Saudi Arabia, together with some of its regional allies, launched a war on Yemen in 2015. Hundreds of thousands of people have died ever since, either as a result of the war or indirectly through unsafe drinking water, diseases, and hunger. A UN-brokered truce this year lasted 6 months until October. The warring sides failed to agree on an extension. International relations professor Jamal Wakim says that the West just doesn't care about the toll that the war on Yemen is taking on children there.
This is not the first time they do that, actually. If we take the precedence of Iraq, when Iraq was put under sanctions for nearly 12 years and 500,000 children were affected and died of these harsh measures, when the former Secretary of State of the United States, Madeleine Albright, was asked about that, she said actually that it was a mere collateral damage. So this has been the case in many other situations whenever the war actually was in favor of the Western geopolitical agenda, i.e. the United States, UK, France, and other Western powers. So the case in Yemen is not new and unique because we've been witnessing the West doing the same in Iraq, doing the same in Afghanistan, elsewhere in Africa, for example, without being liable to any penalty, to any punishment, or to any criticism.
Unidentified gunmen have attacked a hotel popular with Chinese nationals in the African capital. A spokesman for the Taliban-run administration says at least three attackers were killed by security forces. He said no foreigners were killed, but two of them got injured while trying to escape by jumping from the hotel's balcony. Local media witnesses reporting a powerful explosion followed by gunfire. No claim of responsibility yet, but the attack bears the hallmarks of the Daesh terrorist group that has been behind numerous bomb and gun attacks in recent months. There have been a significant number of Chinese business people visiting Afghanistan since the Taliban's takeover last year. Beijing does not officially recognize the Taliban government, but it maintains a full diplomatic mission in the country. The Press TV's correspondent in Kabul joined us a short while ago with the latest on that attack.
Today afternoon, unknown gunmen attacked a Chinese hostel or guest house in central Shahrinau area and the capital, Kabul. Mm-hmm. The attackers first opened fire on the security guards of the hotel, then they entered the hotel. And as eyewitnesses say, bomb explosions also occurred in the area. The Taliban spokesman in a tweet has said that the clearing operation in the area has ended. The attackers are gunned down. As Zabihullah Mujahid says, three armed gunmen are killed so far, and the clearing operation is ended. Zabihullah Mujahid, the Taliban spokesman, further added that foreign guests were harmed as a result of the crossfires, but he said that two foreign guests were wounded after they threw themselves out of the building during the attack or crossfire.
Raise serious concerns because it's a question of the loss of trust of people in our European institutions.
Four suspects have been charged and remanded in custody in a Belgian investigation into the scandal. They include Eva Kaili, a Greek vice president of the assembly. Her assets have been frozen by Athens after bags of cash were found in her home shortly after she returned for an official visit to Qatar. Prosecutors saying that a World Cup host is suspected of influencing the decisions of the European Parliament through cash payments or gifts to top figures to burnish its image. Qatar saying it's not aware of any details of the investigation, stressing that any claim of misconduct is gravely misinformed. Well, I also talked to our Brussels correspondent, Jerome Hughes, for some details, and he explained how European Commission Chief Ursula von der Leyen responded to reporters' questions about a probe into the scandal.
And what von der Leyen was asked about is that, you know, just at around the start of the World Cup, Skinner was in Doha, and he was there for the opening of the World Cup, and he made some very positive tweets. He tweeted some very positive statements in relation to Qatar, and made a few positive comments. And so, you know, people have been asking, why was this happening at that time? Now, von der Leyen, she just completely fudged that question, and then she spoke generally about the need for, in terms of the ethics standards that the European Commission have, that perhaps it should be extended to the other EU institutions. But then, incredibly, at the end of the press conference, she was wrapping up and they were talking about energy, but then journalists started shouting and saying, you haven't answered our question. You haven't answered our question in relation to, has there been any contact to the European Commission from this team of police who are investigating fraud in the European Parliament? Have they been in contact with the European Commission? So eventually then von der Leyen came back, and she did. She responded by saying, well, you know, I would need to ask my officials about this, which is an incredible response in itself, because surely if the police had been in contact with her officials, she would know about it. And then she went on to say, in relation to the Margarita Skinner question, she says, look, if anything, if any new information comes to light, she says, we will act and react accordingly. So listen, the reality here is that there's a massive cloud hanging over the EU institutions at the moment. We're told by people and organizations that monitor corruption that this is nothing new, that it does go on. But really, at this scale and at this magnitude in some of the names. Now, when we talk about Margarita Skinner, by the way, there's no suggestion of any wrongdoing whatsoever. It's just in relation, she was asked to respond about all the media speculation. But, you know, we hear all this virtue signaling coming from the EU all the time and pointing the finger in terms of corruption at countries outside the EU. And all of a sudden, it's sounding very sanctimonious indeed.
Now, Russia says that Europe's attempts to put an end to its reliance on Russian gas are absurd and frenzied. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov says that Europe has shifted to natural gas imports from the United States in a bid to overcome its dependency on Russian gas. But Peskov argues that dependency has not ended, as the continent is now leaning on American LNG. Now, those remarks came as the European Union is planning to hold an emergency meeting on Tuesday to arrive at an agreement on imposing a price cap on natural gas. Most of the bloc's members are struggling with energy shortages and fuel price hikes that's caused by repercussions of the Ukraine war. Now, speaking of the devil, U.S. President Biden stressing his country support for the Kiev in the war. Biden says that Washington is focusing on boosting Ukraine's air defenses as Russia is pushing with airstrikes on the country's energy infrastructure. Now, he made those comments in a phone call with Ukrainian counterpart Volodymyr Zelensky. The Ukrainian president said that they also discussed further defense cooperation and protection of his country's energy sector. The U.S. and its Western allies have already announced billions of dollars in military aid to Kyiv. Russia says its continued supply of Western weapons to Kyiv will only prolong the war. So a while ago, political analyst Marcus Papadopoulos joined us here's his take on the new pledge by the U.S. to give military support to Ukraine.
The Western ruling elites, instead of seeking a political settlement to end the fighting in Ukraine and to end the suffering of the population there, are continuing to send vast amounts of weaponry to the Ukrainian government, which will only prolong the war. And it should also be said that no matter what kind of weaponry the West sends to the Ukrainian government, this will not alter what will be the eventual outcome of the war, namely a Russian victory. Because when I say, as I have said since the 24th of February of this year, that Russia is winning the war, I mean in this way. Firstly, that Russia has captured a very substantial part of Ukraine. And secondly, the Russians, almost from day one, have been waging a war of attrition against the Ukrainian armed forces, specifically by using their artillery. Now, historically speaking, Russian artillery is preeminent in the world. And as a result of this war of attrition, the Ukrainian armed forces have incurred colossal casualties.
That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Economic Divide.
In early 2022, FTX, a crypto exchange, was valued at $32 billion and a household name. It took fewer than 8 days for Sam Bankman-Fried to go from being nicknamed the King of Crypto to his company filing for bankruptcy. Now there are speculations of not only money laundering, but the failed crypto exchange took in millions in donations for Ukraine, but allegedly rerouting the sums back to U.S. politicians. Conspiracy theory? That's what we want to find out in this edition of Economic Divide. Coming up in this program, the FTX fall, money laundering operation, millions in donations for Ukraine, crypto donations went to Kiev's war effort. That's what was reported. Next, crypto's destination. Now, it's supposed to go to Ukraine's national bank, but some of that went to U.S. political donations. The FTX CEO donated roughly $38 million, maybe a little bit more, to the Democratic Party. And then we will take a look at FTX regulation scheme. That's right, this thing is pretty widespread, where FTX spent millions lobbying to shape crypto regulations. Now keep in mind, Democrats are responsible for overseeing the Trade Commission.
Since the war in Ukraine began in February 2022, Western nations and their politicians and billionaires began to rally behind Kiev. Apart from weapons, they began to offer donations to officials in Kiev to keep the government functioning. But it has now turned out that some of those donations were not so innocent. Notorious cryptocurrency exchange FTX and its founder Samuel Bankman-Fried has filed for bankruptcy. Its company was once valued at $32 billion, and its owner had a net worth estimated at more than $15 billion as of late October. His company began to fall apart last month. It has now emerged that his company functioned as the central clearinghouse for all crypto donations to Kiev's war effort.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that gets to the point that this can be a great thing for the world. I think it can also be a really messy thing, but I think that at its core, you know, we've seen millions of dollars go through the systems we've given. I think something close to a million ourselves as well, to support humanitarian aid and growth in Ukraine. And I think when you think about what it would take to get to get funds both to the government there, where we do have a relationship with the Ukrainian government for raising capital for them using cryptocurrencies.
money sent to Ukraine by Democratic politicians in the U.S. would see their money come back in the form of donations through FTX. More simple terms, the company was transferring money to Ukraine and then laundering money back from Ukraine to the Democratic Party. As an example, other parties, such as the Republicans, were also noted in this.
All right, time to find out what is being posted on this. As we speak, there's been a social media storm on FTX and its bankruptcy. So let's get going. First up, like we have been saying for months, the Ukraine war is nothing but a money laundering scheme funded by U.S. taxpayers. This particular view obviously seems to hit it right on. Next, how else are they supposed to get U.S. tax money back into their pockets? That's what we've been saying in this program, and we would elaborate more on that a little later. Next post, well, they would be absolutely spot on. It's a proxy war, with the only winner being the military-industrial complex. They are earning a fortune of our taxpayers' money and giving massive donations to the Democrats, DNC, through FTX and others. Next, great question, is Washington still our ally? EU accusing U.S. of profiteering from Ukraine war through sales of guns and gas and threatening trade war, as top diplomats moan Biden's green subsidies means European businesses are relocating to the U.S. What we did was we further expanded on this. As soon as the Ukraine war started, President Zelensky partnered with FTX and Sam Bankman-Fried for crypto donations. It posed this question, is this greed or is this corruption? Well, let's take a look at this a little bit further in terms of this partnering with FTX. Everstake to launch new crypto donation website. FTX is converting crypto contributions to Ukraine's war effort into fiat for deposit at the National Bank of Ukraine. The Ukrainian government launched a new crypto donations website, streamlining its multi-million dollar effort to turn Bitcoin into bullets, bandages, and other war material. Aid for Ukraine, which has the backing of crypto exchange FTX, staking platform Everstake and Ukraine's Kuna exchange, will route donated crypto to the National Bank of Ukraine. The country's collective efforts have already raised some $48 million in cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin. Other estimates are placing that amount closer to $100 million. All right, so those posts we picked because they kind of fall in line in terms of some of the things that we're assuming at this point about this fallout from FTX and, of course, the different connections it has from money laundering to U.S. political systems. But let's find out what our guests think about this. First up is Vijay Varghese. Now, he's a managing partner at Amparo and Company. It's a global liquidity provider and also market for precious metals, market maker, that is, for precious metals and digital assets. Vijay Varghese, welcome to Economic Divide. FTX was valued at one point to be $32 billion. It was a household name. And then you have this Sam Bankman-Fried becoming an official billionaire, thanks to obviously his secondary and more high-profile business, which was FTX. Now, the crypto exchange grew to be the second largest in the world. He was estimated to be worth $16.7 billion, but in 8 days, the firm collapsed. How could that happen in such a short amount of time?
The way it happens is this. The way FTX was structured, the way it was built, it was designed by its own inception to be something other than a quote-unquote crypto exchange. Its setup is very similar to what you find not in a stock exchange or a stock market or an actual physical crypto exchange, but something you'd see similar to an Enron. In fact, when experts have taken apart FTX's corporate layout, they've seen over 70-plus entities that we know of and possibly even more that was within its corporate structure. And you only get a structure like that if your whole design was to money launder, your whole design was to move money, steal funds, mix funds. Nothing good comes out of a structure like that. That's number one. And number two, a 28-year-old kid out of college, there's no way in hell a kid like that could come up with a structure like that. This was created for him. FTX is a creation of very, very nefarious private interests that are right here in the United States.
All right, thank you for that. We're going to throw that point to our next guest and see what he thinks. Craig Holman serves as Public Citizens He's a Capitol Hill lobbyist on ethics, lobbying, and campaign finance rules. And also, he's an expert on campaign finance. Craig Holman, welcome to Economic Divide. All right. Now, there are charges against FTX when it comes to the failed crypto exchange that it was a money laundering operation. It took in millions of dollars, if not more, in donations for Ukraine, but allegedly it rerouted some of these sums back to U.S. politicians. That's a very severe charge. Now, in terms of the Democratic Party, the second largest donor was Sam Bankman-Fried, pouring in some roughly about $40 million into Canada's coffers in 2022 alone. Do you see that? Do you agree with that?
Well, one part of that story is true. I mean, Bankman had laundered actually even more. Personally, he gave about $40 million to Democratic lawmakers to try to avoid regulation of the industry. And then his co-conspirator, Ryan Salami, gave about $23 million in campaign contributions to Republican lawmakers. All in all, the cryptocurrency industry has, in just the last 2 years, has literally increased their amount of campaign contributions to American lawmakers by almost fivefold. And that was all designed to try to prevent Congress from coming out with a strong regulatory scheme.
The InfoNews section of the program is here. That's where we take a look at some other news from around the world with an economic flavor. First up, we're going to take a look at what's called bypassing SWIFT. SWIFT is a financial system in which Russia and China have plans to bypass it. Now, these trading partners have been boosting transactions in national currencies. We've been telling you about that all along here at Economic Divide, pretty much. The Russian Deputy Prime Minister actually has said, quote, in gas contracts, we are already switching to settlements in national currencies. So there you have that aspect of it, which is happening in rubles and in yuan, Russian ruble and then the Chinese yuan. And that's happening on a parity basis. He then added supplies of oil and oil products, as well as coal, are also being switched to payments in national currencies. Just a side note here, Russian price cap on its oil was actually approved by the EU, something that Russia has outright denied. So we have to wait and see how that's going to affect the way that transactions are happening when it comes to Russian oil. All right, next up, we're going to take a look at protests that are happening at Amazon. You've heard of Amazon, I'm sure. They have staged walkouts, and this came on Black Friday, in which it was called Black Friday Employees. And what they did, these protests happened across the globe, and they demanded Amazon to naturally pay better wages and to improve their working conditions. This has been going on for quite some time, actually. Now, these protests happened from Germany and France to the U.S., from India to Japan and the United Kingdom. It shows how vast it is, where Amazon's employees downed their tools and joined marches for that Black Friday. All right. EU gas purchases, I just mentioned the EU, and since in terms of insider EU gas purchases, the European Union has spent actually $13 billion on Russian LNG this year. Go figure, how is that possible if they're being actually sanctioned? Now, that's five times more than in 2021, in which the highest demand came from Belgium and from France. Now, the surge in LNG imports this year shows the difficulty in punishing Russia for its special military operation in Ukraine. I wonder if Belgium and France actually knew that there was going to be a cap on the Russian oil, and they were the ones who actually have spent the most buying it. Anyways, taking a look at this particular piece of news, this is very important in terms of a split between the U.S. and France. The French president has warned that subsidies paid to U.S. companies under a vast green energy plan may split the West as a whole. He further added that U.S. industrial subsidies are, quote, super aggressive against French and European competitors. Trade tensions clouded his high-profile state visit to the U.S., which he paid a visit to the U.S. just very recently.
You're listening to Economic Divide. The series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
We've reached a segment of the program called the In-Depth Section, where we will look at the relationship between FTX, Ukraine, the United States, and in particular, the Democratic Party, and in turn, FTX contributions. Let's first look at the timeline of events that are important in maybe answering any ambiguities there. First, in September 2021, Ukraine formally legalized crypto. Then comes February 2022. Russia's special military operation in Ukraine began. And then we're taking a look at February 26. Kuna, which is Ukraine's largest crypto exchange, receives crypto for the war in the same month. Now, this crypto exchange is what it received was called a war effort donation. Next up, we take a look at a month later from that date, in March, Kuna's collaboration with FTX began. It said that it worked with FTX to convert cryptocurrency donations into Ukraine's government-issued currency. Now, as to the amount of the money that flowed in, officially this is what was reported, close to $100 million in crypto donations. Now, the Crypto Fund for Ukraine, run by Michael Chobanyan, he's the founder of the Ukrainian crypto exchange Kuna, accounted for 60% of all the donations. In case you were wondering why crypto, because crypto donations allowed Kyiv to obtain funding instantly and then deposited them in the National Bank of Ukraine. Now, FTX's connection to the U.S. political parties. FTX's CEO, Bankman-Fried, has become a major Democratic donor. FEC records showed that he made significant donations to Democratic candidates and PACs, including a $27 million donation to the Protect Our Future PAC, which supports mostly Democratic candidates. However, he has also made contributions to some Republican candidates. Now, maybe this diagram can put things into perspective, titled U.S. Tax Dollars at Work. Money came from FTX in the form of donations to the Democratic Party and PACs. The party itself will then obviously back Biden. Then Biden gives the U.S. tax dollars in the form of military and humanitarian aid to Ukraine. Then Ukraine uses the U.S. aid to partner with FTX. Now, the parts that's most concerning, all of them, frankly, but the U.S. military and humanitarian assistance. The U.S. has given billions of dollars to Ukraine. Don't forget that. And then finally, when it came to the 2022 U.S. midterms, let's take a look at who were the largest donors. Now, in this case, since our focus is on Sam Bankman-Friedman, he was the number two donor. You can see over here, George Soros came in at number one at $129 million. All right, in case you didn't get that flowchart or anything that we just talked about, let me reintroduce our guest. Vijay Varghese, managing partner at Empower & Company, rejoins us to tell us what he can. Well, our question to you, first of all, welcome back. Our question to you, Vijay, is the news that Ukraine accepted donations towards its military defense against Russia via digital currencies. The first question that comes to mind is, why is it accepting digital currencies in the first place? I mean, if you want to take a look at the amount of money that the U.S. is contributing to this war, it's billions of dollars. And maybe that is one of the reasons. What do you think? What is the reason for that?
Oh, yeah. It's a great question. And I'll tell you right now, if this was simply a war of attrition with Russia, and part of it is, okay, there's many layers to this whole Ukraine thing. But when you just look at why, just the question is why digital currency payments were used in Ukraine, right at the same time where the U.S. is sending billions of dollars to Ukraine, and then all of a sudden, left and right, many, many brand new Ukrainian exchanges, cryptocurrency exchanges were popping up, the answer is really simple. If you want a fast and efficient way to covertly fund various groups that are in Ukraine, and we know that the Azov Brigade, the Banderistas, the Stepan Bandera, those who follow this Nazi ideology that's so prevalent within the Ukrainian power structure, if you want to fund some of those people of the most ill repute, this is a great way to do it. It allows you to fund very quickly. It allows you to get your money, get your capital into whatever dark, nefarious project you want to get into, whatever missions you want to run. And then it also covers you from any sort of congressional oversight.
I think the key word the phrase was congressional oversight that our guest Vijay said there. Let's see what Craig Holman thinks. He serves as a public citizen's Capitol Hill lobbyist on ethics, lobbying, and campaign finance rules. Welcome back. This deal with the cryptocurrencies being accepted from Ukraine, coming through anonymous donors, really, is something that is very much under question here in terms of what I'm asking you, because we don't quite understand why that is. Why is the Why is Ukraine receiving it via cryptocurrency? Why is the U.S. Actually okay with sending it that way when it's billions of dollars that we're talking about here?
Well, you know, I am not a believer in the whole cryptocurrency industry, so I would advise everyone to stay away from cryptocurrency. But what was going on, there was a cryptocurrency startup company in Ukraine called Everstake, and it was their idea to try to pull in some more money from foreign sources to help pay for the war effort. And they did pull in roughly about $60 million, according to records, to pay for the war effort. So they were just trying to come up with other means of getting investments that they could use to buy helmets and other things to, you know, to help defend themselves against Russia.
Back in March, the FTX launched crypto donation platform Aid for Ukraine. Practically, it set itself up as a central clearinghouse for all cryptocurrency donations to Kiev. But the company funneled at least some of that money back to the U.S. through political donations. Bankman-Fried was once one of the most important donors to the Democratic Party for the midterm elections. He poured nearly $38 million into candidates' campaigns in 2022.
Oh, yes. Her staffers have been talking to a lot of folks in the industry, trying to figure out what was really going on. And in fact, actually, there one of them was very, very interested in the question, how did FTX get so big so fast? And those of us in the industry who were watching what was going on and frankly were appalled by some of the behavior that was taking place there, we knew what was going on. And again, a lot of this has already been reported to law enforcement and it's starting to come out. And I expect there will be more that does come out. So yes, they've been watching this and they've been on to the right questions, I think. And let's see now whether there's follow through in Washington. At this point, who knows?
In March of this year, the government of Ukraine passed a law that creates a legal framework for the cryptocurrency industry in the country. It allowed banks to open accounts for crypto companies. According to reports, the Ukrainian government had already received over $60 million in crypto donations as of March. That money has not been updated since then, and there are no reliable information about the exact amount of money Kiev has received in cryptocurrency. But the reasons for Ukraine's push towards cryptocurrency were under question, especially at a time when Kiev is already receiving huge sums of money from Western nations. Ukrainian officials have not provided any detailed and reliable reports on spending. Ukraine is said to have spent 75% of the money it raised through cryptocurrencies, but what happened to the remaining funds cannot be unambiguously explained. Critics say the lack of full-fledged reporting has cast doubts on the proper use of the service.
Bitcoin's use in military operations has been on the rise since the Ukrainian army received Bitcoin donations. According to new statistics from blockchain analytics startup Elliptic, within a 12-hour period, there was approximately $400,000 in Bitcoin contributed to Come Back Alive, a Ukrainian nonprofit group that supports the armed forces. Elliptic reported that the crypto donations reached hundreds of thousands of dollars and has been poured into Ukrainian NGOs and volunteer organizations attempting to counter Russian military operations. So, how does Bitcoin benefit from the military operations? Volunteer groups have historically supplemented the work of Ukraine's military by providing additional resources and manpower. For instance, when the former pro-Russian Ukrainian president Viktor Yanukovych was deposed in 2014, volunteers stepped up to assist protesters. In order to provide support, these groups often accept funding from private donations via bank transfers or payment applications. However, cryptocurrency such as Bitcoin has grown in popularity since it allows users to avoid financial institutions that may prohibit transfers to Ukraine. The volunteer groups and non-governmental organizations such as Come Back Alive, which has accepted cryptocurrency since 2018, have used the Bitcoin for a number of purposes. These include buying military weapons, medical supplies, training services, and drones for the Ukrainian army, as well as supporting the development of a facial recognition device intended to identify whether someone is a Russian soldier or a spy. Cryptocurrency fundraising is becoming an increasingly important component of current conflicts all around the world. One of the appeals is that the money cannot be traced to the sender. This could even include governments and their officials who may want to send funds in order to remain anonymous. This puts into question the goal of the governments, which in the case of the US could be to start a color revolution like it did in Ukraine. According to an MIT researcher, Jason Lowery, who is an astronautical engineer in the U.S. Space Force, Bitcoin can play a critical role in national security, and the U.S. should acquire Bitcoin to counter the impact of other nations potentially seeking to wean themselves off U.S. dollar reliance. Okay, that's the end of this segment of the program.
In conclusion, there are two important issues here. First, FTX being a money laundering operation, you know, moving money around in Ponzi scheme style. But the more important issue, really, there are two of them. First, using crypto money to fund a war through anonymous donors. Is that the trend now? And then to create instability in another country, maybe. Then governments using their own money, with politicians getting some of that money back in the form of payback, for example, crypto, obviously. Now, that is a very, very dangerous game on both fronts. Think about it. That does it for this edition of Economic Divide. From Mikhail Tavli and the team, it's goodbye until the next Economic Divide.
Ocean of Dua.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we'll have a glance at Kumail's supplication and we'll discuss a commentary on that. We'll be back in a few seconds, so stay tuned.
هيهات مع ذلك الظن بك ولا المعروف من فضلك ولا مشبغ لما عملت به الموحدين من برك وإحسانك.
Dear listeners, we were discussing this part of the Kumail supplication from Imam Amir al-Mu'minin Ali alayhi salam. Hayhat ma dhalika dhannu bik, far be it from you, this is not what is expected of you, wala al-ma'rufu min fadlik, nor what is well known of your bounty, wala mushbihun lima 'amalta bihi al-muwahhidin min birrika wa ihsanik, nor is it similar to the goodness and kindness you have shown to those who profess your oneness. These are the words of Imam Ali alayhi salam after the thorough discussion of burning fire of hell as punishment for those who deserved it. Imam Ali alayhi salam says that this is not what we have known from your bounty to punish the ones who have professed to your oneness. As we concluded in the previous episodes, by following the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, we will be promoted to an excellent position. We will reach the source of mercy and bounty, as the Almighty Allah Himself introduces. The holy verse of the Quran says, لَقَدْ كَانَ لَكُمْ فِي رَسُولِ اللَّهِ أُسْوَةٌ حَسَنَةٌ. Certainly, you have in the Apostle of Allah an excellent exemplar. Now, the point I want to clarify here is that being an excellent exemplar is not something particular to Allah's Messenger, because Allah and the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam have said that this position is transferred to Ahlul Bayt after Allah's Messenger, since they are his true successors. So being an excellent exemplar is a legal position which the Ahlul Bayt have inherited from the Holy Prophet sallallahu. By adhering to the Ahlul Bayt, we will be the wayfarers of the path of Imamah, and the ones who are true wayfarers, the ones who wish to associate with angels and hear their glorification, as well as the true servants, better know that they cannot possibly reach sublime positions without adhering to Ahlul Bayt. In this relation, the Holy Prophet ﷺ says, الروح والراحة, happiness and convenience, والنظرة واليسر, mercy and easiness, واليسار, والرضا والرضوان, triumph, wealth and improvement, and pleasure, والمخرج والفلج والقرب والمحبة, contentment, solution of problems, and love for Allah and His Messengers, والمحبة من الله ورسوله, لمن أحب علي, are all for those ones who love Ali and follows the Imams after him.
And how can the gods of hell threaten him when he calls out to you, my Lord? And how would you abandon him therein when he has faith in your grace to set him free? Alas, that is not the concept of you, nor has your grace such a reputation, nor does it resemble that which you have awarded by your kindness and generosity. To those who believe in your unity, I definitely conclude that had you not ordained punishment for those who disbelieved in you, and had you not decreed your enemies to remain in hell, you would have made hell cool and peaceful, and there would never have been an abode or place for anyone in it.
Thank you, Allah, that we're here, feeling so good about all the things that we went through, knowing that God is pleased with us too. It's not a dream, this is so true, and we know we'll be here forever. The feeling is indescribable, knowing that this is our reward.
The ocean of dua.
And this is what the other infallible Imam, alayhi salam, mentioned. Whoever is glad to see the mercy of Allah without any veil must accept the imamah of the Holy Prophet's family, hate their enemies, follow the imam of the believers from among them. And in this case, when the judgment day comes, Allah will look at him without veil and he will look at Allah without veil. This is the abstract of one rather long tradition from Imam Ridha alayhi salam. So, since the Ahlul Bayt have gone through all stages of devotion and submission to Allah, which, as you may remember, we mentioned the core of supplication, the kernel of supplication is true submission. Since the Ahlul Bayt have been endowed with all virtues and have gone through all stages of submission to Allah, they have become the excellent exemplars for us all. And this is a practical teaching. This is a practical school for teaching many true wayfarers, for telling them where to go, and for showing them the light of the straight path. And whoever resorts to Ahlul Bayt in every aspect of life will benefit from their truth to the extent of their capacity and understanding. The one who truly adheres to Ahlul Bayt will not be punished. This is what this part of the Kumail supplication explicitly says. وَلَا مُشْبِهٌ لِمَا عَامَلْتَ بِهِ الْمُوَحِدِينَ مِنْ بِرِّكَ وَأَحْسَانِكَ. You want to know how Almighty Allah treats the ones who profess His oneness? He treats them with goodness and kindness. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this episode. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parstoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.